3 years after he shot and killed himself, too many people remember Hunter S. Thompson as a caricature for the drugs and the alcohol, the guns, the explosive rants. But one of the iconic characters of the 60s and 70s was also one of the best and most original journalists of the 20th century. No one who ever read it will ever forget the passage from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, where Thompson describes the moment in the late 60s when the young and idealistic believed that they were unstoppable, that their energy alone would triumph over old and evil.
We had all the momentum. We were riding the crest of a high and beautiful wave.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
So now, less than 5 years later, you can go up on a steep hill in Las Vegas and look west, and with the right kind of eyes, you can almost see the high water mark, that place where the wave finally broke and rolled back.
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight.
Actor Johnny Depp reading the words of Hunter S. Thompson in a new documentary by filmmaker Alex Gibney, who joins us in just a moment. If you'd like to talk with him about his brilliant and ultimately tragic subject, our phone number is 800-989-8255. You can email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation about Hunter Thompson on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Alex Gibney joins us from our bureau in New York. His new film is Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Good to be here, Neil.
And you begin the film with a haunting scene with Hunter Thompson as a much older man writing a sports piece for ESPN on the morning of September the 11th.
Yeah, it was it's stunning to me, that piece, because while Hunter, largely speaking, had lost his great powers that he had in that zone that he was in from 65 to 75, on that moment he recaptured them and wrote a piece that was so prescient about what was going to happen, the erosion of our civil liberties, the sense of a kind of East-West crusade that we were going to embark on. It was very hard to see how that was going to play out on September 11th, but Hunter saw it.
And as you said, by that time he was pretty much a burnt-out case, but obviously had flashes left.
He still had the juice. He could still bring it when the moment required.
How did you decide to make a film about Hunter Thompson?
It seemed to me that it might be interesting to make a film about a guy who broke all the journalistic rules at a time when people in power were using these, you know, ad hoc rules against journalists and sometimes bending the rules in unconscionable ways, like the way the White House somehow managed to credential a part-time male prostitute named Jeff Gannon so that he could ask softball questions from the back of the room whenever, you know, the president or the press secretary got into trouble. So in times like that, it seems to me you need somebody who's going to break the rules or at least think about how somebody did it way back when.
Oh, Hunter Thompson might have approved of Jeff Gannon.
He
compared to the other guys in the room.
He would have been there to shout him down at the same time, I think.
And as you say, he broke all the rules. I mean, there was a kind of movement, if you will. You don't really talk about the idea of new journalism in your film, but you do have some of the people most closely associated with it, Tom Wolfe and Tim Krause, who was, of course, a colleague of Hunter Thompson's at Rolling Stone.
That's right. And there were others, too, who weren't quite as out there, people like David Halberstam, people who, you know, said it wasn't enough to report. You could begin to infuse your reporting with your own perception so that and what's wrong with that after all? I mean, you give some people a sense of the world outside, but don't deprive them of how you might see or how you might analyze the situation.
And his first great success, Hunter Thompson's, was with Hell's Angels, where he spent a year with Hell's Angels and wrote a book. It's not quite the Gonzo that he later got into, but it is definitely different from the journalism that was going on in that day.
That's right. It's proto-Gonzo. You can begin to see hints of it. But one of the most important things was that he, as Tom Wolfe said, was embedded in the Hell's Angels battalion. I mean, this was a time when many reporters were in pressed trench coats, you know, using their microphones or their steno pads and going up to people for comments on stories that seemed to be part of some mysterious grand narrative. But Hunter wanted to see the story from the inside out, so he hung out with the Angels. He rode with them, and ultimately they beat the hell out of him in a final sequence that marked the end of his book. And he ends the book actually with a quote from Joseph Conrad: "Exterminate all the brutes."
Well, he learned some things about the Angels that an outlaw band that in the end lived up to their reputation or down to their reputation.
That's right. I think that for a while the Angels were being romanticized. Now, the Angels always played by their own rules. They didn't make any bones about that. But they were being romanticized as these kind of cute cult figures that you could have over for dinner and they would liven up the party. And indeed, as we saw to some tragic effect, you know, they were brought on as bodyguards in the famous Altamont concert in 1969 when a concert ultimately ended rather tragically in violence as a Hell's Angel killed somebody trying to shoot at the stage. So, you know, this was a tough crowd.
Let's see if we can get some callers on the line. We're talking about Hunter S. Thompson, the Gonzo journalist, with Alex Gibney, who's made a documentary film about him called Gonzo. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's begin. This is Chris, and Chris is calling us from Phoenix in Arizona.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Nice. I just wanted to say, Hunter Thompson, incredible, incredible man, most influential journalist on the planet.
How did he influence you, Chris?
Actually, you know what? He's the reason I'm in school right now. I'm studying. I did a lot of work on him and everything. And he started out like, you know, I just.
Sorry about that.
Well, one of those calls.
One of those calls. And, people like to get on the radio sometimes. Anyway, as we consider Hunter Thompson, one of the things that it's a central moment in the movie, actually. He runs for sheriff in his, adopted hometown of Aspen in Colorado. And darn near wins the thing.
That's right. I think he set out to do it as a complete lark. I mean, you know, part of his platform was he was going to rip up town streets and sod them. He was going to call Aspen Fat City, and he was going to arrest any drug dealer that had the temerity to sell drugs for money. He was going to put them in stocks in the town square.
I love the line where he shaved his head for that campaign so he could call his opponent the long-haired opponent.
That's right. That's right. There's no question yet. He was a radical.
Let's see if we get a real caller on the line. This is Eric. Eric with us from Santa Clara in California.
Hi. I grew up worshiping Hunter S. Thompson when I was in college and learning how to write. And it seems as though he was completely on his own back then. But I'm wondering if shows like The Daily Show and Colbert Report, this sort of sarcastic approach where fiction is more truthful than truth, are the natural heirs of his Gonzo journalism. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Eric, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think that's fair comment. I think that's absolutely right. I think the Colbert, particularly Colbert, but also Jon Stewart, are kind of heirs to some of what Hunter was doing. And not only because of the kind of quasi-fictional component, which I think Hunter was into also, but really, you know, saying it straight rather than saying on the one hand, on the other hand, more or less using the facts to say, oh, by the way, this our president just lied to you last night. I mean, it's more direct. But also with a great sense of humor. There was a sense of attack, a sense of anger, but always with a hilarious sense of humor.
Well, in a way, I was going to ask comedians, you think of Saturday Night Live when it first started and a lot of people doing stand-up at that time. They seem to absorb a lot of the that same spirit that Hunter Thompson had.
Yeah, that Gonzo sense where you could go anywhere and take the absurdity of politics and blow it up and not try to pretend that these are respectable people talking in respectable tones.
Let's get Abel on the line. Abel with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I just had a question for the documentary person. This past semester, I took a class in Mexican-American literature. And we read a book by Oscar Zeta Costa called Autobiography of a Brown Buffalo. And at the beginning of the book, there's a note from Hunter S. Thompson about how influential he was towards Hunter's writing. And I was just wondering if Oscar Costa is mentioned in your documentary at all.
Oscar is definitely mentioned in the documentary. I think Oscar probably deserves a documentary of his own. But We have a loving – there's a section I found which I just love in the film where in the bowels of Hunter's archive, we found an audio tape that actually represents one of the chapters in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And it's a tour de force by Oscar, because it's the so-called taco stand scene from the from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I thought it was a piece of inventive literature, you know, where they go to a taco stand and they ask this woman, you know, they say, we're looking for the American dream. And she says, oh, I know where that is. It's turned left by the psychiatrist's office down on Main Street. And they do this riff for a long time. But when you listen to the tape, it's Oscar who's playing the game. Hunter's kind of along for the ride. And Oscar is kind of driving it on and having great fun with this woman and playing this sort of double entendre game. He's really a very witty but ultimately very politically pointed guy. He's great. Great and inventive character.
Well, I'm glad to hear he's mentioned in there. I think Hunter gets a whole lot of acknowledgement, but sometimes Oscar gets kind of lost in the mix. And that autobiography of a Brown Buffalo was incredible.
Abel, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking with Alex Gibney about his new film Gonzo: The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And it's not just Oscar Acosta who's in the film. There are Jimmy Carter is in the movie, Pat Buchanan, George McGovern. You have quite a cast in this picture.
Yeah. No, Hunter got around, and good thing. I mean, this is a guy who really did live the journalist's life, which is to say he talked to anybody. And a lot of people loved Hunter because he was one of those people who, when he entered the room, the chemistry of the room changed. He would sometimes do things that were wacky and wild and allowed everybody else to be a little bit more free. But even somebody like his greatest enemy, Richard Nixon, whom he absolutely despised, nevertheless, he berated, I mean, he just pestered Pat Buchanan until he finally let him in to a limousine ride in 1968. Imagine Hunter S. Thompson riding with Richard Nixon for an hour in a limousine. And what do they talk about? Football.
Here's an email we have from Karen. I lived and worked near his home in Woody Creek, Colorado, as a waitress in a local restaurant. My 6-year-old son was sick one day, and I took him to work one morning. Hunter came in at about 10 a.m. and ordered bourbon straight and sat down at the table in the back with my son and chatted with him about what he was coloring for about an hour.
That seems right about Hunter. Hunter, at his best, could talk to anybody about anything. And I think that was one of his great strengths as a writer and as a human being.
Let's get James on the line. James with us from Iowa City.
Hi, yes. I was wondering in your course of research if you had an opportunity to uncover any young, budding print journalists that kind of have those same seeds of creativity that Hunter Thompson possessed that we might find that can kind of enliven print media for us in the future in some of the same ways he did.
I think Hunter Thompson threw all the seeds out.
That's probably right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, James. But do you see any modern-day equivalents?
Sure. I mean, you see somebody like Matt Taibbi if that's how you pronounce his name, at Rolling Stone and
Taibbi,
elsewhere.
Taibbi, I think, yeah.
Taibbi. But in any case, I think the key thing about Hunter is not to look for the imitators. It's to look for the equivalents, the people who are trying to do their own thing, their own way, but maybe inspired by Hunter. That's why, you know, when the other caller mentioned Colbert and Jon Stewart, I responded right away. But I think there are undoubtedly print journalists out there that are heading in that direction. They just, you know, it's all about taking your own path, I think.
We mentioned earlier that he is a brilliant but ultimately tragic figure. There's some wonderful moments near the end of the film, poignant moments, where Hunter Thompson describes the impact of his own celebrity on his ability to work as a reporter. Let's listen.
I used to be able to stand in the back, you know, and observe stories and absorb them. Now, the minute I appear at a story, then I become part of it. The first time I went to a press conference with Jimmy Carter, I had to sign more autographs than Carter's son. And the Secret Service had no idea who I was. They thought I was an astronaut.
And that not only made it hard for him to work, after a while, whatever it was that allowed him to be in that zone, as you call it, from 65 to 75, that ebbed away.
It did. And I think he did get lost in fame. In part, he created a kind of quasi-fictional character, this Raoul Duke character for himself, that he got lost in. And I think he began to believe his own press releases. So, you know, he lost that ability to – he got, I think, lost in his own bubble. You know, because one of the great things about his writing in that zone, as I call it, is that – it was a nice balance between straightforward reporting and a general curiosity about the world and his own perceptions of that world, sometimes fantasies and hallucinations as well. But that tension was what was so great. Over time, I think he became more self-obsessed, and you saw less of the outside world penetrating the bubble.
Interesting that the one of his early successes was a story on the Kentucky Derby, where he thought he completely missed the story and came back with something instead, which was observations of not of the horse race, but of the people in the stands, and a wonderful piece. And it ends almost with a piece he gets sent for Rolling Stone to cover the Rumble in the Jungle, the fight between Muhammad Ali and George Frazier. He blows it. He completely messes up the assignment.
Yeah, he goes to Zaire to see the Foreman Ali fight, and Ali was one of his great heroes. But he gets so zotzed, you know, he gives away his tickets and spends the fight in the pool sipping scotch while he takes all this marijuana out of this big bag he has and watches it disappear down the drain. Now, on the one hand, he was completely high. I think on the other hand, what had happened to Hunter and why that ended up being a kind of turning point for him was that here was a guy who always liked to, you know, take the side of the underdog, and he wanted to believe that Muhammad Ali was going to win, but then I think he decided at some point he wasn't. So he lost faith, Muhammad Ali wins, and where is Hunter? He's out in the cold now. It set him off on a long path to decline, I think.
Alex Gibney, good luck with the film.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Alex Gibney joined us from our bureau in New York. His new film is Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back from the museum tomorrow. Join us then. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.